Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. On today's show, we are, you know, I'm trying to like post on my story that we're going live with our next guest and challenging the limits of being multimedia here. So on today's show, we're going to indulge our sense of wanderlust with a big layover in Italy. If you are hungry or thirsty, you might want to hit pause and grab a snack because we're going to be talking a lot about great food and wine. Coincidentally, this little four-year-old named Nicola sat next to me on the subway ride here and was this total little adorable chatterbox. He reminded me of my nephew Luke, but he and his parents were visiting here from Bologna, of all places, and his favorite food, ready? Pasta!
I was going to say bologna.
Nicola is in good company, and we've got a lot of pasta talk coming up. That voice was Dave Tatasciore. For those regular listeners, you might notice that Dave hasn't been around that much. We're trying not to take that personally, but he is, yeah. But Dave's back today. Welcome back, Dave.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Thank you. You missed another jubilee.
Yeah, I was out of town again. Funny how that works out.
I know. I'm starting to think maybe there's a reason you're always out of town for Jubilee.
No, I was getting slaughtered in the Poconos for Friday the 13th.
What does that mean?
I was at a cabin in the woods on Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. I never watched horror movies growing up. Or I've just never watched horror movies. I just can't handle them. Life's hard enough. Why would you watch things like that?
Yeah, life is a horror movie.
But what's not a horror movie is our sponsors. Our sponsors are wonderful, and they keep us on the air. If you are daydreaming about culinary school, maybe it's time to say bonjour to Le Cordon Bleu. Learn more about the legendary culinary school's most prestigious professional qualification, Le Grand Diplome, by visiting cordonbleu.edu. Then Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland. If you love beautiful Swiss cheeses, look for Emmy's premier Kalt Bock label and cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux, aged in the 22-million-year-old Kalt Bock cave for superior flavor unlike anywhere else in the world. And if you are a subscriber to the Cherry Bomb email, I'm actually sending out a really fun email today or tomorrow about our adventures with Emmy, which have been quite extensive over the past few months. We've had a really good time with them, from having fondue and a yurt to smelling cheese perfumes. But you're going to have to look at the email to understand what all that means. We have a brand new Radio Cherry Bomb tour to announce. It's our Future of Food tour, and it kicks off May 9th at Chef Anne Quattrano's Star Provisions in Atlanta. We've never done an event in Atlanta, so I'm really excited to visit and meet all of you who live there. We'll be taping a panel discussion in front of an audience, and we'll be talking about what's new and what's next for women in food and for the food world as a whole. Tickets are $35 and include all food and drink, which will be amazing, of course. See our website for tickets or follow the Instagram link. We're also making stops in Austin, Denver, Minneapolis, Nashville, and Portland. We've been getting a lot of requests for all those cities, and we'll be announcing those dates really soon. If you live in any of those places, you know we would love to see you. And please DM me any dining recos, because it's been a long time since I've been in any of those cities, and I really just want to, I don't know, just eat and drink my way through all those places and meet all the cool new chefs and see all the cool new places. I'm very excited, and I hope you are too. On to our first guest, Sky McAlpine. Am I saying that right, Sky? Sky McAlpine, writer, seasoned home cook, and author of the popular Italian lifestyle blog, From My Dining Table, which explores the food and life of Venice through the eyes of someone who has lived in the city for more than 25 years old. She now divides her time between London and Venice, where she writes and teaches cookery workshops. A Table in Venice, which is out now. Is it out? It is right out,
yeah,
right now,
it's
right?
Out now.
Because I know you had copies, early copies at Jubilee.
Yes.
Yes, we were very excited about that. Which is out right now is her first book. Sky writes, "I am neither wholly English nor wholly Italian, but I am much of both. Venice really has always been home, and with time, I have come to think of myself as Venetian, if only by adoption." Sky McAlpine, Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's so exciting to be here.
Oh, what a thrill. What a thrill. You brought a little bit of Venice sunshine with you because it's so nice out today.
It's beautiful out. And I'm so pleased to be here in the home of pizza.
That's true. Regular listeners know we record in the back of Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick. So you were brought to Venice at the age of 6.
Yes.
And basically never left. So tell us how your family wound up there.
That's right. So my family moved there when I was 6 years old. And the idea was to spend a year in Venice, be in Italy a bit, enjoy it, and then move back to England. And we fell in love, and we're still there.
Why did your parents move from England? And what part of England?
From London, where we're from. And it was just, my mother had spent a lot of time in Rome in her early 20s, and she'd fallen in love with Italy. And they'd bought a kind of wreck of a house that they wanted to sort of slowly do up and eventually have as a holiday home, but it just became our actual home.
I love that you call it a wreck of a house. You write about that in your introduction. And you're still in the house that you grew up in?
Still in the same house.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's lovely. I mean, that's the wonderful thing about life in Venice, is nothing really changes.
So I've been to Venice once, and I really thought it was the most magical place. I mean, it's almost like Disneyland, but for grown-ups, but in the best possible way. I mean, it doesn't feel like a real place compared to anywhere else you've ever been.
Well, the thing that's so magical about it, I think, is there are no cars, which sounds really obvious, but actually that impacts so many aspects of day-to-day life. It means it's much quieter, life is slower, so you walk everywhere. And because you're walking everywhere, you see people's faces, and so it's a very tight-knit community, and you know everyone, if not by name, you know them by face, and you know where they live and what kind of shopping they do and everything. So that's pretty magical. And then obviously the buildings are beautiful, and it's old, and it's somehow floating on water, which is kind of incredible and doesn't really make sense, but it does.
It is incredible. Sometimes it's the water is like right there. Yeah. I visited in October a few years ago, and just remember there were I don't know what you call them, but there were sort of these ramps all over the city.
Yes.
And they were like elevated sidewalks, and you had to walk on them because of the water.
The high tides. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because October, November sort of peak high tide season. And high tides, it literally, the water, as you will have seen, just floods in through the streets and will be knee high or higher. And so they create these raised walkways for parts of the busier through paths of the city, so you can walk without getting your feet wet, which I remember when I was little was just like complete magic, splashing through the puddles in Wellington boots. And now that I'm older and care about my shoes, it's a bit less fun. But
but you do have two little boys, right?
I have one little boy.
One little boy.
Who's about as naughty as two little boys, mm-hmm, put together. But he loves the acqua alta. He absolutely loves it, yeah.
And is he splashing around in all the puddles?
Oh, yeah.
He's so cute. His picture is in here. He's adorable. Yeah. You'll see him in the cookbook when you pick it up. So Venetian cuisine is different from Roman cuisine, which is different from Bolognese cuisine, and on and on and on. Can you tell us something about Venetian cuisine?
Absolutely. I think that's the great joy of Italian food, is that every city or every town has its own way of cooking and its own dishes, and Venice is absolutely no exception. It's Italian food, so it's simple flavors, it's fresh and it's seasonal. It's a lot of seafood because it's right on the sea, but it's also a lot of spices, saffron and cardamom and cinnamon and pink peppercorns and so forth, which is quite unusual for Italian food and is a real legacy from Venice's time in the sort of 14th and 15th century, when it played this huge part on the spice route.
That's great. Tell us, God, I don't even know where to begin with this, because when I was looking through your cookbook, there are just so many incredible recipes, so much incredible food. What's your typical food day? You probably don't have a typical food day, but if you had to walk us through what a typical food day would be for you.
Well, it always starts, and you almost always starts with, obviously, with breakfast. But breakfast, and this is quite an Italian thing, and Venice is no exception, is usually sweet. So it's either a slice of ricotta cake, or a slice of yogurt cake, or quite often we'll go to a local bakery or coffee shop, local cafe, and have a brioche. which is sort of like a croissant, but unlike the French croissant, which is sort of quite flaky and buttery, it's much breadier. So it's kind of like this pillowy, soft, sweet, buttery dough. And then at the center is usually something yummy, like it might be custard or apricot jam, or maybe chocolate or pistachio butter or something really good like that. So that's how it always starts.
Ooh, pistachio butter.
Yeah, that's good.
What exactly is that?
It's like Nutella, but for grown-ups. But made with pistachios. So it's green, but it's kind of, I don't know how they make it. It sort of tastes halfway between white, like a white chocolate paste and pistachio. It's really good. I do recommend it.
And it's sweetened?
It's sweetened,
ooh.
Yeah.
Because okay,
you can
really
get pistachio pesto, which is savory, and you have instead of, which is more of a Sicilian thing. But pistachio butter is really good.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I need to look for that, learn how to make it, or someone needs to smuggle me some back from Italy. What's your signature coffee drink?
I love a really milky coffee. So I'll have like a cafe latte or something like that. Something nice and kind of creamy and milky. Or quite often I won't have coffee, I'll have hot chocolate, because the hot chocolate in Italy in general, and a couple of places in Venice that do it incredibly well, it's not sort of thin and milky like certainly it is in the UK, I don't know here in the States, but it's like a thick custard. So it's like a really thick chocolate custard. It's incredibly good. And in some places, they'll do it with a dollop of zabaione custard in this.
Tell everybody what zabaione is.
Oh my gosh, zabaione is the best thing in the world. And it's essentially you whisk egg yolks and sugar and prosecco over kind of a bain-marie until you get a sort of very light custard that's about as light as air. And just so incredibly good.
Unbelievable. Sounds so good. And then lunch, what would a typical lunch be?
Lunch, so one of my favorite things in Venice is lunch. And it's sort of crazy because it's like a blanket of quiet settles on the city because everyone closes for lunch. So schools end at 1 o'clock, the bank closes, local businesses all close at 1 o'clock. And because it's a really small town and everyone walks everywhere, everyone will then walk home and go home for lunch and eat with their families, which I think is just such a wonderful way of living. And it kind of means it doesn't matter what you're eating, just that ritual makes the meal pretty special. But usually you'd have like a pasta or a risotto. We have a lot of risotto in Venice. For lunch, yeah. So usually, like my idol, my sort of idyllic Venetian lunch is when I was at school and I was younger, had a best friend called Laura. And Laura's father was a fisherman and Laura's mother was an incredible cook. So the best thing in the world was the days when after school she'd say, do you want to come home and join my family for lunch? Because their lunches were amazing. So we'd always have some kind of usually like little starter thing, some kind of seafoody, cold seafoody salad kind of thing. Then there would be a pasta or a risotto. Then there would be usually like a veal chop or a little steak or some chicken or something like that. And then there'd always be ice cream. There'd always be gelato. It was just absolute bliss. So in my mind, that's the Venetian lunch.
Risotto takes so long to make. I can't even imagine that being the lunchtime staple.
It does. It does take ages, but there's sort of, it's real kind of good store cupboard staples in there. So it's sort of, it takes a long time just stirring, but you can kind of be getting on with other stuff in the kitchen whilst it's bubbling away and just stirring periodically.
But that says so many nice things about Venice and the way of life in Venice.
Yeah. And everyone has more time in Venice. People achieve less maybe in a day, but have more time to kind of enjoy it. And lunch is a big deal.
So walk us through the rest of the day. Any, is there much snacking that goes on?
Probably not so much a snacking, but there is definitely a breakfast, there's definitely a lunch, and then there'll always be a spritz. Spritz is kind of like an aperitivo or meeting for drinks.
Are all of you dying as much as I'm dying here? I feel like I can never say another Italian word out loud again. I just want to hear Sky say all these words. Say it again.
Lo spritz is the spritz, which has now actually become quite trendy and the
so
rest of the
here.
World has mm-hmm. adopted it. Which
but
is,
it's, you know what? It's not the worst trend.
It's a good trend.
There are definitely worse trends.
In Venice, it's not trendy. It's sort of been there forever. But it's actually from, was it the Austrians occupied Venice in the 19th century? And they have left a kind of quite an interesting culinary legacy, which is a variety of fabulous ornate pastries, really good chocolate cake, and the spritz, which I think was very kind of them, actually. And so spritz, you meet up with your friends. So your lunch you really have with your family, and dinner you really have with your family. But spritz is that social moment when you meet with friends and you have obviously a spritz or maybe a Negroni or a Bellini or whatever kind of takes your fancy. And then just a few cicchettini, which just small bites.
So cicchettini.
Cicchettini.
And exactly. What are your favorite cicchettinis?
Well, I love anything deep fried. Like deep fried sage leaves or something like that for me is just absolute bliss.
You are totally welcome to be in the bomb squad. Sounds about right.
And otherwise, it's often things like it's really simple because it's more about that kind of quick meeting with friends than it is the actual food. So often you might have crostini, so kind of bread with whatever on top. So mortadella and pistachio maybe, or a bit of prosciutto or lardo with honey and rosemary, or just kind of something really simple like that. And then maybe some chips and maybe a few like little bits of pastry or something.
Oh my God, and we haven't even gotten to dinner yet.
And then you go to dinner.
And what's for dinner?
Dinner's probably something like fish, because there's so much fish in Venice. And, you know, especially in the warmer months, you sit outside, you're on the water, and you might have like an array of different fish antipasti, and then probably have a pasta again. Maybe something like gnocchi with spider crab, or maybe spaghetti alle vongole. That's so good. Everyone loves that.
And that's spaghetti with clams, essentially.
It is, mm-hmm. It is. And then probably like a nice grilled fish, and then just something sweet to finish it off.
And then one of my strongest memories, I'm sure half the people who go to Venice, is all the gelato shops.
Yes.
When do you have gelato?
So gelato, it's interesting you say that because there are specific gelato times. One is at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And it's really funny. My husband's Australian, so he's really adopted the Venetian way of life and loves it, but he didn't grow up with it. And he, we take my son to the beach every day in the summer, to the Lido. And my husband works in London, so he'll come out and see us at weekends. And kind of last summer, about 2 months into the summer, he was like, so Ines was telling me he has ice cream every day at 4 o'clock. And I was like, well, yes, that's gelato time. He was like, are you sure that's good for him? I was like, I don't know, but it's what I grew up on. It's what everyone grows up on. Everyone else seems healthy enough. So 4 o'clock is kind of like, especially for kids or if you're with friends, you have a gelato. And then my favorite thing to do that I actually do think in the summer months is really special is after dinner to go for a stroll and have gelato then, because it's really hot during the day. It's like New York, it gets so hot and so humid, and there's that, it's like the heat lifts after dinner and the city's quieter and you can hear the water lapping, and you just walk strolling licking your ice cream, and it's not melting all over you because it's not quite so unbearably hot, and it's just my favorite thing in the world.
Oh, sounds great. So what do you love to make at home?
Gosh, well, I love to bake. So I make a lot of cakes and a lot of sweets, and that's largely because I have a sweet tooth. And if I'm cooking, I'll do a lot of pasta and a lot of risotto and a lot of those kind of really simple dishes that once you know how to make one, you know how to make them all, and you can kind of make mindlessly whilst chatting or getting on with other things. And then quite often I'll cook without actually cooking. So it might be like a caprese, so just some fresh tomatoes and some mozzarella and a bit of olive oil and basil. And it's a really nice starter or lunch, but it looks fantastic and it's really filling, but I haven't actually done any cooking.
Do food trends ever infiltrate Venice?
No.
But that's not a bad thing. So you're not going to go to Venice and find avocado toast and quinoa and things like that.
It's impervious to food trends, which is what I love about it. I think, you know, because people often ask me, gosh, do you have any new recommendations for Venice for restaurants? And I'm like, I have a lot of recommendations, but none of them are new. They're all places I've been going to since I was tiny, and they're all fantastic and have been exactly, you know, they're unchanged, they're just as I remember them being. And that's sort of, I think, Italian food's great strength is it's very simple, it's figured out what it does well, and it just keeps doing it.
So tell us how your beautiful cookbook came to be.
Gosh, well, it's been a lifetime in the planning somehow. I love cookbooks. I'm sure everyone who comes on the show says that, but it's my great life passion is reading cookbooks. So I kind of always loved cooking and reading cookbooks and writing about food and all those elements together. And then one day I thought, gosh, Venetian food, people don't, you know, it's like Italy's best kept secret in a way. You think of Italy and you think Roman food, you think Tuscan food, maybe nowadays you think Sicilian, Pugliese, these kind of dishes, but actually the food of Venice is fantastic. It's just the kind of home cooking that I grew up with and that I know and love and that for me really is Venice, is less, people come to Venice and they don't necessarily get to see it because, as you say, it is a bit of a Disneyland. And I think we have something like between 25 to 30 million visitors a year.
Wow, it's crazy. A lot, given how tiny Venice is.
Yeah, population I think is like 50,000. So there's this real, a lot of people come and there are a lot of tourist restaurants that, you know, you can easily come to Venice, wander around, be beguiled by the canal views and the Tintorettos and the Carpaccios and what have you, but just have, you know, an okay pizza or an okay plate of pasta, but kind of go home and be like, it was okay, but I've had better at home. Whereas if you can kind of get into the more home cooking side of things, I think there's some really exceptional dishes.
How do you find that in Venice for those listeners who are going or plan to go? Is it really just a matter of getting off the beaten path?
Yeah, so I'd say get lost. And then once you're lost, look for restaurants that look like they haven't been redecorated since 1962. It's always a good sign. And then kind of settle yourself down and never order from the menu. Always ask the waiter, just be like, "What? Look, you know, I'm here, I'm so excited to eat your food, what should I have? You tell me, just bring whatever you want from the kitchen." And I think then that's when they usually get really excited and they will bring out what the chef and the waiters and everyone are going to be eating rather than maybe the kind of cursory dishes that they've got on the menu.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah, and that's when you get kind of like the moerke or something like that, for example, which are these soft shell crabs, which is highly seasonal and exquisite, but they often can't buy them in large numbers, so they might have a few in the kitchen. And if you ask off the menu, that's the kind of food you'll be getting rather than the sort of standard spaghetti with bolognese sauce or whatever, but it's great. But
that is a great tip. A favorite part of your book is My Venetian Pantry, because you read every cookbook that comes out now has a pantry section and it's always the same, but yours is not. You have amaretto biscuits.
Yes.
What do you do with those?
They are brilliant because they just go with everything. So I will do lots with them. Like, for example, in the book, one of my favorite recipes is pumpkin soup. And instead of having bread with the pumpkin soup, I'll just sprinkle a few amaretto biscuits on top. Otherwise, you know, I make, you know, you could, I had a friend, we had a supper party the other evening, and one of the friends who was coming is gluten-free, and I had in my mind that I really wanted to make tiramisu, and I was upset, you know, I was really craving tiramisu, so I made it with amaretto biscuits instead of with savoiardi, or even just like amaretto biscuits with peaches or in roasted peaches, or just even if put out a tray of those with coffee, and you have a pudding. So oh, I love yum. Them.
Candied peel.
Yes. Well, all Italian baked goods have candied peel in them. It's the unspoken rule. So it's really useful just for kind of zhuzhing up anything from a yogurt cake to even just folding it through, kind of like the custard that you make for tiramisu, just fold that through it and it adds another dimension to it, or sprinkle on top of gelato. Just a plain vanilla gelato and sprinkle a little bit of candied peel on top with a few nuts.
Do you make your own or do they have good store-bought?
They have really good store-bought. I'm quite lazy. If I can buy really good store-bought and it's a huge effort to make, I'll just buy it. I think that's
Did you just say you're really lazy?
Lazy, yeah.
You are not lazy. I read your cookbook. You are the opposite of lazy. Okay, next one is anchovies.
Anchovies. So anchovies you need because they make everything taste better. And I think when they're almost at their, I mean, they're fantastic just like with, you know, if you put out slices of mozzarella, a few anchovies on top and some olive oil, you have yourself a delicious course. But also I think where they're almost their best is when they just subtly flavor a dish. So one of the recipes in the book is for peperoni alla veneziana, very slow cooked peppers, and there are anchovies in there. But I feed them to all my friends, even the ones who say they don't like anchovies, because you can't taste them. They just add this little dimension to the dish. But
Now you have this very quick little recipe in the pantry section. I'm not going to be able to pronounce this. Bigoli?
Bigoli in salsa.
Bigoli in salsa.
You're on it.
Okay, close. tell people what that is and how to make it.
It's fantastic. It's like, so bigoli are Venetian spaghetti. And they're thicker and they're generally wholemeal. And that is sort of, there's quite an interesting history behind how bigoli came to be. Is when pasta became very fashionable in Italy. And Italy at that point, this is in the sort of 18th. And 19th century, early 19th century. And Italy wasn't even unified. It wasn't Italy as we know it yet. But in southern Italy, it had become very fashionable and they were making all these extravagant shapes of pasta, which of course are the pasta shapes that we know now. And in Venice, they wanted to do that or it become fashionable. But the grain that we have in northern Italy is much coarser. And the eggs that they were using were largely duck eggs from the ducks in the lagoon. So the pasta was sort of too coarse to run through traditional pasta machines, so they invented a special machine with a special dye called a bigolaio, and that's how bigoli were born. And bigoli really is a very Venetian pasta, and you can get it in other parts of Italy, but it's quite tricky and specialist. But I mean, if you're making it at home, you can use spaghetti and it's just as good. And in salsa is literally means in the sauce, and it's basically you just toss in a pan some anchovies and some onions and really slow cook them, and it is absolutely delicious and so quick to make. And then you toss it through the pasta, through the bigoli or the spaghetti, with a little bit of the cooking water from the pasta, and it's so creamy and so good. And I swear that even people who say they don't like anchovies, if you don't tell them that it's anchovies, they'll really love it.
Well, it sounds so good. And you've always got an onion or
you do
kicking around in a box of spaghetti. And now just remember to keep some anchovies in your pantry. Then another one of your pantry items, and this is why I love you, is Prosecco.
You've got to have Prosecco.
I love somebody who's always got Prosecco on hand. What do you do? I know you do a few things with Prosecco other than just drink it straight.
Well, drinking it straight, I love because it goes with everything. And it also, we use it for a spritz, but also in zabaione, use Prosecco, both savory zabaione with like asparagus, so that's with a lot less sugar, so it's almost like hollandaise, not quite, lighter than hollandaise, or sweet zabaione that with a few amaretto cookies is the most delicious pudding you could possibly want for. And then I use it even, for example, in the book, another recipe that I really love is linguine with asparagus cooked in a little bit of Prosecco, and that's just like so good.
Wait, explain how you do that.
So you just basically pan fry the asparagus chopped in a little bit, tiny bit of onion, and just instead of using white wine, use a bit of Prosecco to kind of cook them off. And it's just very delicate flavor, and you don't use that much, so you can enjoy the rest of a bottle with your lunch or with your dinner. It's a good excuse. And then you just cook your linguine and toss them together. Right now, this time of year is the perfect time of year to be having that.
Oh my gosh, I love all this. Well, if you are dying over this conversation like I am, or you want to hear more, you really do have to pick up Skye's book, A Table in Venice. Do you still do cooking classes?
Yes, I do. So usually it's when people email me and they're coming to town, and then I organize kind of bespoke. But my plan is this summer to kind of have some proper dates and open it up to a wider group. But please email me. I'm always thrilled to have people come to Venice and cook with them. Absolutely love it.
And they can find you through your website or through your Instagram account.
Exactly. So on my website, all my contact details, and then I'm on Instagram, which will take you through to the website where all my contact details are.
Fantastic. Well, Skye, I can't thank you enough. This was so much fun. Can you say spritz again for us?
Lo spritz. Thank you.
Lo spritz. Anyone who's my friend, this is going to be the summer of Lo spritz, as last summer was and the summer before that. Thank you, Skye. It was really, really nice of you to stop by. Be sure to pick up Skye's beautiful cookbook, A Table in Venice, and have fun cooking from it and daydreaming about her beautiful city. Bye, Skye.
Bye.
It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, authentic, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Le Cremeux is a new, luxurious cheese from the Kalt Bock Cave. Sweet and unassuming at first, this semi-firm cheese keeps you coming back as its flavors and texture develop. Emmy's Kalt Bock Le Cremeux is aged in their 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave. Whether you are snacking or party planning, serve your Kalt Bock Le Cremeux with blackberries, pineapple, or honey, and pair it with iced green tea or a bright Chardonnay, Chenin Blanc, or Riesling. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer. Hey, Bomb Squad. Visit the Cherry Bomb online shop for all things Bomb Squad. We've got signed copies of the Cherry Bomb Cookbook, which features more than 100 recipes from 100 of the coolest women in food. Need a great gift? How about a gift subscription to Cherry Bomb Magazine? And we've got those collabs, like our Headley and Bennett apron. Visit cherrybomb.com for more. Are you daydreaming about culinary school again? Make this the year your dreams become reality with Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school. Study classic French culinary techniques in cuisine and pâtisserie as part of their exclusive 9-month Le Grand Diplôme and graduate into a world of opportunity. You also can extend your course of studies to include culinary management and dedicated internships. Le Cordon Bleu has locations in more than 20 countries around the world and located within some of the best foodie cities out there. London, Ottawa, Madrid, Bangkok, Tokyo, and, of course, the spiritual home of cuisine and Le Cordon Bleu, Paris. Turning your daydreams into reality is closer than ever. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more and let your culinary adventure begin. We are back with Cha McCoy, finally.
Hey.
Wine expert, globetrotter, and creator of Cha Squared Hospitality, a lifestyle company with a focus on tourism and gastronomy. She got her MBA in Italy, which led to her collecting drinking and eating experiences in close to 20 countries. Her admiration for wine led her to study as a wine professional, and she is currently preparing for her, let me know how I get this correct, WSET Level 3 Advanced Certification in Wine and the Certified Sommelier Exams.
That's correct.
It's a mouthful.
Yes.
Cha McCoy, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for having me, Carrie.
Yay. I'm so happy you're here. We have a lot to talk about. I am so hungry and thirsty after that conversation with Sky. I think you were in there listening.
I was.
And probably nodding your head a lot because you spent a lot of time in Italy.
I know. It was a good person to follow.
Exactly. I love a show that's kind of thematic. And I should mention that you and I met totally randomly.
Mm-hmm.
We were at the Wing.
Yes.
And Clancy Miller was doing a cooking class.
Shout out to Clancy.
She was making something from her really wonderful cookbook, Cooking Solo. And you were helping with the wine.
Yes.
And I just started pitching in. And we just started talking.
Yeah.
And you had a really funny sweatshirt on or t-shirt or something.
Oh, yes.
About
my
wine.
My anti-wine club. Anti-wine club. Sure. Yes.
And we just started talking. And Cha is just one of those people who you take an instant like to. And, you know, I was reading through your Instagram on the way over here because
mm-hmm.
you had a long subway ride and so did I to get here. And I don't know if anybody's ever told you this, but you have a really lovely way with your Instagram posts.
Oh, thank you.
And when you know, some people I know struggle with social media or try to find like what's a genuine voice for them.
Mm.
But you just have a really nice way.
Wow. I appreciate that.
And I love the Cha list.
Of course.
You've got all these good hashtags.
Now, my best friend, if she's listening, she's like, I don't come up with anything. Just let Cha tell me what the name's going to be.
Well, from now on.
She calls me the wordsmith.
Yes.
I'm like, oh, whatever.
I want to know what's on the Cha list. I want to subscribe to your email if you have one.
Yes.
And also, it's always a good sign when you're on the subway and you're like caught up
mm-hmm.
in somebody's cookbook or someone's Instagram and you almost miss your stop. And that almost happens every week with Radio Cherry Bomb because I don't know, I'm really blessed. I get to talk to women like you and Sky and last week Ruth Rogers.
Right, right.
More talk about Italian food. And I was reading your post about spa adventures in
Hungary. Yes.
And I'm like, oh my God, I'm at the Morgan Street stop. And I had to like run through closing doors.
Yeah.
So Cha, who the heck are you? Where are you from?
You know, I'm from New York. Let me be specific because we're in New York, right? So I'm from Harlem. Everybody know once they hear that, they're like, oh, she's really from there. And I think that, you know, gastronomy in New York City plays a part, just like gastronomy in Italy, you know, plays a part in your life and part of your culture until you go other places and their whole lives is like, I don't know, Chevy's or whatever. It's in the suburban malls, you know, PF Chang's,
all that stuff.
You know, mm-hmm. And that's like, then that's when you realize like, oh, wow, I was blessed to be raised in a culture of food that kind of just came natural to my environment, you know. So it wasn't any of my doing. It was more or less of me being raised here and then actually having parents who went out their way to give us that exposure. I think it was not because I want my kids to know these other cultures and foods. I think it's because they personally had a liking, in that case, my dad, for other cultures and, you know, working with them with on business level to now, obviously, like sharing food and dinner with them to seal deals that turned into him being able to. So I think when I was young, I actually thought my father actually flew to all these places because it was just like, oh, he must have a passport. It must have been everywhere because he knew exactly what to order. He knew what it meant. He knew what was going to be in it. And the menu was not in English. And I was like, I know he don't speak another language. So he must have been there, you know, touched it, you know, to know, you know, like she said, vongole is going to be clams, you know, like, so that kind of like amazed me growing up, just kind of watching how my father, the art of ordering, I guess if I can come up with a book, that'd probably be one of them, you know, because that was one of the things that I remember my dad doing.
That's so cool. I mean, we didn't eat out a lot as a kid. I think because I was one of five.
Okay.
I am one of five. And it was just such a production to take us anywhere. My brothers didn't really eat much. And I just remember as a kid, you'd be so scared when you went to a restaurant and you didn't want to order too much because you didn't want the bill to be too much for your parents.
Mm.
And it'd be like, you know, the thought of having an appetite, like,
right.
didn't get an appetizer. And so I see how my nieces and nephews live today, and it's like an appetizer. It's so funny. Like, going out was such a treat back then.
I know.
Do you remember some of the places your parents would take you?
Yes. And I actually revisit one of them. And I love this time now that we have Instagram and everything like that. It's kind of cool to like show the photos and stuff. So one of them is Hop Key in Chinatown. And this year was my first time back there since the year I left to go to Italy. So that was kind of like me and my dad. I was like, hey, I'm about to go to Italy. I don't know if I'm going to have good Chinese food. So we got to go to Hop Key before I go. So this is my first time there since 2010. That's when I left for Italy. Was this year for my birthday in March. And my mom met up with me there. And we just picked out, like, we normally, they feed family style. So it's just the two of us. And we're ordering everything we normally would order if our whole family was there, because we just want to taste it, you know. And of course, everyone goes ballistic, like, oh, bring me back some of that. You ain't Hop Key. Like, everybody who's our family or knew us for being, I guess, that family who always go out and go to these places, like, bring me back some snails. Because we were just like, obsessed with, you know, umami, any savory dishes. And, you know, that's, you get a ton of that in Chinese, especially on cuisines particularly. So I love Hop Key. Around the corner is Dragon. They is ice creamery. They actually make every, oh, you're familiar, of course. So that was our traditions. And this is me eating at like 8. You know, and my mom used to have cravings when she was pregnant with me for that same restaurant. So, so just kind of continued to be in our family. When we think Chinese food, we always like, no one does better than Hop Key if you're going to top New York City for me. So it was great to be back. I even brought one of the pictures in black and white because my father was really into cameras and film. So it was a picture of me in black and white, even though he probably had a color camera of me eating at the table. I did a throwback Thursday of me eating there again right next to each other. I was like 8 in the picture.
Oh,
so
I want to see that picture.
All right, I got to share it with you. But
that's awesome.
But that's one of the places I always think about. And we go to a place called Little Venice in the Bronx for Italian food as well. He gave his 60th birthday there. That's how, you know, for us, you know, even when I was here before with Kersha, talking about places that I eat in restaurants I think about for New York City, it's always places that's very lowbrow, but very much the authentic I feel like I can get in New York City. So it transported you to those places.
So you dropped in there that in 2010 you went to Italy.
That's correct.
Why did you go to Italy?
It was not part of the plan. I can tell you, as I was applying for my MBA, I was living the life, you know, and I guess, you know, the Eat, Pray, Love book get everybody all caught up to. So I think I was a little bit nostalgic as well with the story. And personally, things were shifting. And then I also realized that I was entering into a new journey because I did apply for my MBA, but I still had a full-time job, a condo in Jersey, and a dog. So it still didn't make sense on how I actually was going to make that happen. But I think once you say yes, I'm one of those people. So once I say yes, I fully commit everything. I don't care where this furniture go. People could take it for free. If you can come here and get it, it's going to end up on the street, you know, kind of thing. And I had my visa situation worked out. And I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to quit my job and just go live out there and finish my full MBA. And that's what literally, that's why Italy was one of the places on the list. But I was just fortunate that I just happened to pick a school that had that. I didn't go there with the intention of doing my MBA in Italy.
Do you speak Italian?
I did when I was dating Italian. That's another conversation.
We'll say, or you can save that for your Eat, Pray, Love book.
Yes.
You've got to write. I mean, you've got to write a book. You know that.
I'm already.
Do you have an agent?
I don't have an agent. Okay. Why, you have one for me?
We're going to find you an agent because I want to read your version of that.
Ooh.
Totally.
Yes, Carrie, please claim
it. There's food, there's love, there's wine.
There's a lot of it.
Totally.
Right?
Totally.
And I'm bringing the wine all the way back. All right?
So how's your Italian now?
Va bene.
Well, I guess the better question is, if you move to Italy, can you get by?
Of course.
Without
speaking
Italian.
I was just there in January.
Yeah.
I gave my last event there. I'm doing like a pop-up international version of my event, The Chameleon. So the last one, or very first international one outside of New York City, was Rome, of course. I'm returned back home. I call it my second home. So, So when I'm there, I mean, it's embarrassing because like all of my friends who still lives there or returned there, they're all looking like, that's all you got? Like, like you're struggling still to like order. You sound like when you left, like this is bad in 2012. Like, and I'm like, okay, I'll do better next time. So, I mean, I know how to order my food. That's all I got. So
sometimes that's all you need to know how to do. I mean, yeah.
Yes.
If you can, I don't know, figure out, you can walk through a city, get lost and just figure out your way back. But if you know how to order, you're golden, right?
Right. And that's the kind of get lost idea of like Europe that everyone loves too, especially I think Italy with the quaint, in Rome too, particularly with the narrow blocks and kind of getting lost throughout the city and being in new neighborhoods. Like, that's part of the story too. So I think that when I go back, I technically don't want to struggle. I do want to be fluent and be able to have full conversations with people. But now my new language is wine. So sometimes even if I'm not, you know, I think people assume that I had Italian culture because I can talk fluently about the wine that I'm drinking. And so that makes another connection, since part of my days is usually spent around food and wine while I'm there, obviously. It's like, where do I sleep? And then everything else is about food and wine when I'm there. So, and then friends kind of meet me somewhere in between.
So how did you fall in love with wine?
I would say it's Italy. I definitely say food first. I think you kind of always want, I was one of those, like, foodie is kind of, like, shamed. I know you could tell me, like, you know, I feel like when you talk to, like, real chefs, they don't call themselves foodies. They say, okay, kidding me? I'm a chef.
No, but it's okay. The word, I know, people hate that word, but I feel like it does describe what you need to describe.
Right, when people get it, like, you know, they know, respect my eating decisions, like, because I'm a foodie. So, like, okay, she's official. Let me let her choose the restaurant. But so when I'm around my friends who are chefs or et cetera, I realized that they were playing a very particular role, which was being the chef who can critique this food or place that we're going to. I was just the foodie, which we know now is becoming a little bit more acclaimed thing to like documentaries on Netflix now about foodies flying all over the world just to eat in these Michelin star restaurants. You know, maybe one day, you know, that'll be like one of my chapters two of my book, being flown to places to eat. But I realized even easier is it if you had played a role at the table or in the restaurant. And I said, yeah, so this psalm thing may work. You know, like, let me take it professionally, because, I mean, even though people knew me as the wine girl, like, I'm the one who normally chose before I even got any certifications or did any practical studying, you know, I was the one who lived in Italy and who did spend time in vineyards and who have been to particular vineyards in Chile, et cetera. So then people couldn't really, you know, they related to me because I was a traveler. So they was like, oh, that's cool. You were 7 weeks in Chile. Like, what did you see? What did you do? And then when you say that you spent like 3 of the weeks like on different vineyards. And I'm like, oh, so you really didn't get to see as much as like if someone was just there to like be a tourist. Because now you actually are like working and learning about the grapes and a terroir and understanding that and trying to, you know, another language barrier, dealing with Spanish. And this is now Chilean Spanish, you know. So I think that made me connect in a more local, real way that, you know, as they say, travel deep, you know, beyond just me being the tourist of Chile, for example. So so I take tourism very seriously. And that's because I take wine and food very seriously as well. So for me, it was kind of like the connection through travel. And then me wanting to make sure I had a permanent place at the table when I'm around my sophisticated chef friends with their John Hopkins, you know.
Culinary degrees.
Yeah.
I love that term, travel deep.
Yeah.
It's very evocative. It's not just going someplace for a few days
and
kind of coming away. You're not really an expert or anything.
Correct.
Nothing wrong with that if that's all you can do. But I'd love to know more from you about a place like Chile because you have traveled deep places there.
And then, like, I mean, trust me. I mean, because I have, again, because my connection to all this truly is still the ties of, like, traveling, at the end of the day, I'm still talking to other women who look like me, who traveled like to way more countries than me. And I'm in like a WhatsApp group chat, I remember particularly, and it was probably like five or six of us at the time. And I'm like, girl, it's about to be, I was there around the holiday season. I went from like right after Thanksgiving and didn't come back to like Martin Luther King Day.
Wow.
So obviously I'm missing Christmas and New Year's and all that with my family. And I'm in a country that I don't speak the language and I have no friends. I had no real connection to anyone. People actually connected me to people because I was there. And so I kind of like met people that through Facebook in that way. And I remember being on this WhatsApp chat and someone like saying like, oh, Chad, what you doing for Christmas or holiday? I was like, I think I'm going to take this 8-hour bus ride down to see penguins. And like, and they were like, yeah, girl, do it. And I was like, but it's an 8-hour bus ride. Like nothing in my heart would even tell me to do that in America. Like, why would I go to Chile and do it? Like, is there no train? Is there no flight? Why am I getting on this bus for 8 hours? And it was like, that's what they do. You got to do what they do. Like, you know, like you didn't plan this trip to like, you know, be out there, go travel deeper. Now I already traveled deep. Now I'm trying deeper, like going. And I swear, I mapped it all out. I end up in Valdivia, which is basically interesting, very German culture in Chile, which I think you don't know about because we don't talk about it. Very Spanish and German language on all the signs there. Food, schnitzel, everything that's German is now in this area with the big volcano that's still active in the background and all these things, you know, walruses coming up to me. I was like, nah, I don't know where I'm at. Now I'm in a whole nother like world because I left Santiago de Chile, which is a big city. Still a lot of mountains and, you know, we have the Andes, you know, right along us. So we're still out of my zone. But now I'm in like this idyllic place that I have no idea. I don't think people don't even know exists. So now I was like thanking all my friends for encouraging me to still go and have that moment and kind of get into now the beer culture of German beer in Chile. So now I'm having, you know, I'm visiting these breweries, you know, in like this very German area but I'm in Chile. So, you know, I love that intersectionality of the countries and learning the history and now connecting now back to spirits because now I'm having this beer, you know, experience there when I really came for the wine, you know, so.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of wine, let's talk about Communion, which is a big project of yours.
Yes.
Tell us what that's all about.
So the Communion, I actually put it together just thinking, like, how can I get more of my community to understand and love wine and appreciate it? Because a lot of people that are, I would say Americans first, but I would say people of color, low income, middle income families usually drink sweet stuff. Let's just say that, whether it's wine, cocktails, etc. No problem with drinking it and appreciating it. But if you understand there are other grapes besides Moscato, that maybe even sweet wine is not what you really want. You actually want something that may be a little bit off dry. That's a real terminology in the wine industry. And at first I thought I was going to be like, oh, I was so nervous. I remember doing my first one. I'm going to share all this, you know, amazing knowledge about climate change and, you know, the judgment of Paris and talk about, you know, how California, you know, wine industry picked up. And then I realized like people didn't even know how to like drink wine. And I was like, wait a minute, I got to go way back to like the beginning, like with some of this. And those were things that I didn't like learn in the classroom. Those are things I picked up from just, you know, drinking wine, I would say more professionally or in different areas where I'm not just in my house. So, so people showing me and picking up things from being out there. So I made that a mission to like, I want my community to be able to understand and now be able to know the difference. If you still want to hold the wine glass with your hand fully around it, no problem. But now you're not ignorant to how to do it or why people are telling you to hold it by the stem. I'm telling you, you know, you are changing the, you know, the temperature of the wine when you do that. So clearly, if you're not doing that on purpose because it's too cold, then you should hold from the stem. So now people are like, aha, like when they see me, I always hold it correctly now, you know, because I've shared that with them. So at first I thought I was going to be given all this in-depth knowledge. And then I realized I just need to probably go over a lot of the simple things because our culture just have not been taught these things. And if you grew up in Italy and you were still low income or middle income family, you grew up with wine as part of your culture. So technically you didn't have to be rich to start ordering wine every day, including champagne. You don't have to wait for your birthday. You know, you can literally do that every day. There's affordable champagnes and you don't have to substitute it for Prosecco. You can drink champagne when you want.
So how often are you doing communion events and where?
I am, my next one is in Quebec. That's my next pop-up. Yes, Quebec City. I know, I'm so excited. It's my first time there. And that's going to be on May 6th at 7 o'clock, partnering with the local chef there. He has a small restaurant, very kind of rustic feel, authentic to like how I like them. It doesn't have to be the fancy, fancy restaurant with the cellar, even though I will be spending some time at the Fairmont in Le Chateau. You know, that's actually where the conference I'm speaking at is going to be at.
So what is it, a women in travel conference? Is that what I saw?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it was, and this is my second time speaking. So it was very exciting to be a part of the conference. And so follow me there. And if you're going to be in, if you're in Canada or your listeners in Canada who's paying attention to, if you're going to be in Quebec, but the next one in New York, I'm planning for May 20th. I'm trying to do something special. Maybe I may go a little bit further up. I'm in transit between what I'm doing, or I may come up with something a little bit different than what I did before, because if you know, Harlem Eat Up is that same week from Marcus Samuelson event. So maybe do something close to Harlem, but do a little bit different than my typical sit down dinner, which was truly to get people to learn about wine, sit at the table, have communion with each other, you know, in the, if you want to say, religious sense as well.
Spiritual sense.
Mm-hmm. Being able to share and socialize. And, you know, besides taking pictures for Instagram, let's talk. Let's talk about food. Let's talk about wine and let's get to know each other. And so I've been building a community around just eating at the table and having my different networks come out and to be there too, whether you're industry, whether you just love food, and highlighting local chefs and chefs of color, women chefs. That's been a big passion of mine. Again, letting me, you know, how do I be able to give a platform for other people, since I'm exposing my house, which is how I started at first, and I have the room to do it here. And while other people may can't do it in their situation or they work for big companies and can't be as creative at their restaurants, they can come do that, you know, here and do a little freestyle. And so I love that energy that we bring to the table of combining, making up menus, etc. So
that's so great. So if you are relaunching your website tomorrow,
yes,
I think.
If it's not live right now, it should be up right now. If it's not up right now, it will be up probably later today or tomorrow. But it's, you know, I still, the page, the landing page is still there. So it's still an active site. You can go straight to my name, ChaMccoy.com. And I'm on Instagram as Cha_squared, CHA_SQUARED. And that's kind of where I post mostly. I have Facebook, et cetera, but that's all building up as I now have the website and have everything flushed there. But come to the events and keep in touch. You have another question?
No, I was going to say, so you can just go there and buy tickets or find out more information.
Yep. So I try to put my links, whether if it's through Eventbrite or straight through pay me directly through PayPal, on my website will be the house of like housing all of my events that's coming
up.
Cool.
And there's still, we didn't talk about Sunday school yet.
I know.
And we've got this wine in front of us.
And we're going to talk about the wine.
I keep wanting to like grab the wine, but I'm like, okay, I'm going to grab it.
Yeah.
I'm going to drink while Shah talks about Sunday school.
Yeah. So right here in Bushwick.
Oh, wait. And I'm holding my, now I feel like I'm doing everything wrong. I'm going to hold it from the stem.
Okay. Yes, sir. It's all right. You can do a little swirl. Girl, you drink and enjoy. Sunday school series.
You have a lot of, well, it's interesting. You have a lot of like religious terminology that you use. You have Sunday school, so you have communion.
And that just may be, and it, not that I'm like super religious. Something about me is connecting. I'm like a big, like, the thread has to speak. Your brand has to match. I'm like super, or like I can, like, you know, even when I met you, I can, you told me what you was doing. I went to your conference. I had a blast, met people. I was in there for like a flash, you know, but I took in all the energy and it matched exactly what I got from you and only knew you for that one day. So, you know, when brands connect and you don't feel disjuncted, you know, I know in business school, right? I'm the one with the MBA, right? So, you know, they tell you to do that, but it's good when you feel like it's authentic to the person, you know? So for me, it was like, it was very authentic, not so much that it had to be religious, but it was like, oh, I already said the communion, so let's do Sunday schools. Like, you know, like what else happens at church? What else I could pull out of here? And I even had my WWJD, what would Jesus drink? Hashtag that was going crazy because I was like,
I didn't know that's what WWJD stood for.
It did not, but you know, like it's kind of like now I'm just playing off of the whole, you know, now I'm just going crazy with it. So Sunday school sermon, I actually worked with a local wine store that specializes in natural wines, organic wines, small producers here in Bushwick as well. So Irvin Bottle, shout out to them if they're listening. The owners there, we connected last year at the Raw Wine Festival. Did you go?
So much fun.
Oh my God. We didn't know each other then, but we're going to know each other when we go this year.
I can't even wrap my head around that festival. First time I went, it was a raw, it's called Raw Wine.
Mm-hmm.
And it was same place in Bushwick, and I went the day before Election Day in 2016.
Okay. I think that's I 2016. No, I went in 2017. Okay.
And I didn't know who was going to, I'm like, who's going to be at this thing? I get there, it was packed to the walls.
Yes.
It was like, people just came so thirsty, and they were pouring, and everybody's running out of wine, and it was incredible, and it was such a celebration of this whole new movement in wine that we could do a whole show just talking
for
about
sure,
that.
For sure, for sure. I'll be back for that.
And then I went last year, and mind blown again.
Yeah.
And I can't wait for the next one.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that the attention, like, at my wine store in Harlem, shout out to the winery, if you ever on 116th and 8th, you know, we have wines. We're big about, you know, my general manager, Eric, who is also my wine mentor. He's really serious about making sure. He's been in the industry for years. And I think that, you know, choosing wines that represent what we think, you know, whether it's textbook version and some new age versions of it, but we're not into trying to have, if we're going to sell you Moscato, but we're not going to put what you can get at the local liquor store that's literally one corner away from us, like in our store. So are we technically competing with them? Yes. And I think that Irvin Bottle, the same thing has happened with them, right? They have a bunch of wine stores that's in the area, but how can we, you know, show our niche, you know, in that case, it's natural, organic, small producers. And so it was cool to partner with them to, like, you know, to highlight the wines that they actually have in their store during my tasting is basically what happened for Sunday school. So it was more educational, no food pairing. We did do cheese, you know, in typical like aperitif like items, but it was just in meats, et cetera. But it was just more for the idea of like understanding wines and getting to the root of it. And so I'm trying to make sure we schedule one, hopefully next over the summer. They're not as intense as the communion because I have, you know, I have a hired chef. I have a full venue space. It's a production. I'm printing menus. I'm basically a pop-up restaurant every time I do it, you know. So I'm the sommelier. I'm the host. The maitre d', you know, so in that case, it's kind of like I'm just educating people about wine, and we have all different levels of people that's in the room because of that, because I'm outside my neighborhood too. So now my community grows a little bigger because of that as well. So I appreciated that opportunity with them. Trying to put together a wine and wellness retreat. So please, please come.
Oh my God, I want to sign up for all these things.
Please come.
So, all right, we are running out of time and I'm so sad, but you're going to be back. I know it.
I will be back.
All of you, you are going to hear a lot from this woman in the year ahead. You're going to blow up, Cha. I just know you are. So.
Well, this is cherry bomb. So I'm hoping I blew up because I'm here, right? We already blowing up. Perfect.
So sign up for Chaz. Check out her website. Sign up for newsletters. Follow her. Everything.
DM me. Stalk me.
I would love to see some of you at the communion or,
yes,
or at her Sunday school or at Wine Wellness Women. Whatever. Sign me up. I'm all about this.
But perfect.
Cha, I'm really happy we met,
yes,
at the Wing and got to talk. And you're born in March. Are you a Pisces?
I am a Pisces.
Did we talk about this already?
Are you a Pisces?
Yeah, winter birthday.
Woo, March 1st.
Oh, on March 15th. So
yes,
we're like kind of separate, but
together.
Together, totally.
That's why we're sisters from the same soul. Yes, I love it.
No, I liked you immediately when I met you. So
perfect.
And you know what we're going to have to do this summer?
What?
Le Spritz.
Oh, of course. Le Spritz all day. I'll bring the Prosecco, right? I guess I have like one role. Bring the good Prosecco.
Done.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for today's show. Thank you so much, Cha. You're the best.
Thank you, Carrie.
And to Sky. Thank you to our engineer, Dave Tadashore. Dave, we missed you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And the band Tra La La for our theme song. And thank you to Emmy, the maker of beautiful Swiss cheeses, and Le Cordon Bleu Culinary School for supporting our show. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and Heritage Radio Network. You can subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can subscribe to Cherry Bomb Magazine at cherrybomb.com. One more housekeeping thing I forgot to mention. I will be at the 92nd Street Y on May 7th. Mm-hmm. So check that out. I will be with my friend Tamar, and she's got a new book out. Tickets are available right now. I'll tweet out that link or something, put it on our social. But May 7th, come hang out if you are in town on the Upper East Side, 92nd Street Y. And then don't forget, tickets are on sale right now for our first ever event in Atlanta, part of our Future of Food tour. You can find the link on our website or on our Instagram. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. You are the bomb.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.